On Tank Riot today, we have a killer flu update, will Dick Cheney resign, we learn about the Victor Scale, Wallace and Gromit, and our DVD pick, Batman Begins.
America for 300 years has been the land of promise for the rest of the world, the land of new frontiers, new opportunities.
Hey, wait the hell you get up.
Clicking sounds, sounds that reveal the presence of radioactive rays. The instrument, a Geiger counter, is converting radioactivity into sounds we can hear.
What the hell with it?
Welcome to Tank Riot. This is your never dull podcast from Madison, Wisconsin. So strap on your helmet, close the hatch, and by all means turn up the volume. I'm Tor, and with me is Victor and Sputnik.
Good day.
I said good day.
Well, I'll start out our show today with it's kind of some news and some theory and predictions. Let's hope they're not predictions, but they're future possibilities that we all need to be aware of. Anyway, as you know, Scooter Libby and Karl Rove, and now it kind of looks like maybe Dick Cheney are getting in a little trouble for the whole revealing of the Valerie Plame's true identity as a CIA spy.
Or as she's known, Valerie Flame. That Flame. Was how she was written down in the notebook.
Yeah.
Not to be really? Confused with Valerie Plame.
This is where typos in the news come from, yes.
That's right.
The reporters never listen.
Judith Miller also got awarded an award for a First Amendment award of some kind, which I think is just the height of irony myself.
Does it come with a kick in the pants?
Oh, good Lord. I mean, Tor, back to you.
yeah. Like, okay, so we're going to give W, the greatest president ever, trophy too, I guess.
Absolutely.
The greatest president ever.
He's my favorite. He's the bestest.
Get a brain, Moran.
Apparently, thanks to, multimedia over in Wisconsin here, I actually heard that on the East Coast in the District of Columbia, the buzz is that Dick Cheney might resign over the Valerie Plame affair.
Yay.
So that is a possibility. And, let's face it, the guy's health isn't that well right now. He's not 18 anymore. And so, he may just resign because it's too much work. And
well, my question to you is, Tor, how will we know if Dick resigns? Because he's been in an undisclosed location for so long, it's not as if the man's highly visible. It's like a tree falls in the forest kind of thing. If you catch my drift, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I guess I'm not sure I have an answer for you on that. But I guess if he resigns and, writes a letter that ends up in the news somewhere, then we'll know.
Okay,
But,
an op-ed piece by Dick.
He could just hide for a few more years.
Okay.
Yeah, I doubt he's going anywhere.
Yeah.
Very possible.
He's unmovable.
But they did say he's not going to run for president in 2008.
So. Yeah, well, that's something we can all look forward to.
Well, the thing is, when you're president, you can't hide in a bunker all the time.
How many heart attacks per week on the campaign trail, though?
You say what you want about Dubier, but, the guy looks like he could throw a hell of a kegger or a good barbecue down in Crawford. But Dick just doesn't have that kind of mammalian charm that George does, being a killer android.
True.
That's right. Well, of course, if the vice president resigns, we're left with just a president, and it gets all complicated with the chain of command thing if something happens to the president. So typically what most presidents do in this situation, well, actually, I don't know that for sure, but I'm just guessing, but is they appoint a new vice president. And I'm getting there needs to be some kind of approval process for that, but
I'm not sure how that's done exactly.
Well, we'll have to study that maybe for a future show. But anyway, it's been done before, because wasn't Gerald Ford a VP of
That's a very interesting sidebar, Tor, because Gerald Ford had to be appointed by Nixon after Agnew left, Spiro Agnew. And, okay, the people working for Jerry Ford at that time were Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld. At that time, Dick Cheney was working for Donald Rumsfeld.
And it changed so much.
Yes, yeah. Haven't they? The players, the names, players. Not so much. And they actually managed to get Nelson Rockefeller removed as Gerald Ford's vice president when he assumed the presidency after Nixon left. Because, well, he was just far too progressive, if you know what I mean. Yeah, kind of pink.
Yeah, he was leftist, so, you know.
Well, yeah.
Didn't he have dinner parties with Che Guevara or something? Anyway.
Something.
Well, so I'm thinking, okay, how's this going to play out, you know? If Dick Cheney resigns and we get some new guy in there, who are they going to get? Well, I don't have a clue, but I think they'll get probably some good-looking young guy that they can run as the next presidential candidate.
But Harriet Myers is running for Supreme Court. That's different.
I got $10 riding in on this in the office that Harriet's going to smooth through, that it just doesn't matter anymore.
I got a 16-ouncer Jaguar for you. If you...
Jaguar. Yeah. Ooh,
well, the Democrats aren't strong enough to oppose anything. The Democrats will talk a bit and then whatever, she'll just fly through. But
she'll fly through, absolutely. Everyone's trying to convince everyone else now that, yes, in fact, she will stomp all over Roe v. Wade.
Great. Well,
yeah, great. Super, super.
Yep. So, but anyway, okay, so I'm thinking a new VP will come in there. And you see the right-wingers, the neocons, the, I don't know, Dark Lords, whatever.
Fascists.
Yeah, we want to call them.
Bloody fascist bastards is what I like to refer to them as.
They have to figure out how to stay in power. So here's a theory. I'm trying to think like Karl Rove, possibly. Okay, so they get the new young guy in there, and he's in there for a few years, and then something happens to George W. Bush. It will be staged. It'll be kind of possibly... He'll have a mental illness and he can't perform anymore.
Again, how do you tell, Tor?
Yeah.
Okay. What's your baseline?
Probably more likely he'll just say, I would like to spend more time with my family and step down.
So it's kind of like a Trojan George.
Yeah. And then so new VP comes in as president just in time to campaign as the incumbent president for the next go, for the 2008 elections.
Oh, perfect.
And that combined with all the sympathy for old poor George having to step down will get all the gullible excited again about the fascists and vote for the new VP, now president guy again. And the fascists will have then kept power.
Yeah,
I don't. So that's my theory.
I don't think any of that's going to happen, but I'm kind of worried about what kind of worm the Democratic Party's going to throw up there to squirm on the hook.
Don't get me started.
For what? How many, was it 17 months or something that they're on the campaign trail?
At least
the presidency,
that.
And then they all have at to fight, you know, 19 of them first, and then they fight against each other for eight months, and then it goes down to a cage match for eight of them, and then, you know.
The funding has already started, so yeah. I'm sure, you know, people are digging in the pockets now for, you know, your losing candidate of choice, Hillary Clinton. I'm sorry, Hillary Rodham Clinton. Who else would we have? Well, of course, Kerry is going to go again. Fred Gwynne once again going to run for the presidency.
Has he said that?
Well, his website's still up. Really? He's still taking contributions. Huh. He's certainly positioning himself to do so.
Let's face it,
we're going to end up the I shouldn't say we. I don't consider myself a Democrat. The Democrats are going to end up with someone with Michael Dukakis's eyebrows, John Kerry's nose, and Hillary Clinton's hairdo. That's my theory.
I just pray that Dick Gephardt doesn't try again. Because, you know, the man, speaking of eyebrows, okay, Dukakis too much, Gephardt none at all.
Yeah.
There's got to be a happy medium there. You know, the man scares me. And he can't cast a shadow at 3 p.m. or be photographed by conventional means.
He's Gephardt just he doesn't. He's not dynamic enough.
That would be one way of saying it. Another would be that the man has no soul.
He sold it to Satan a long time ago.
Oh, really? He's with the dark side?
I would say at least.
That's true. I mean, that what the Democrats need to do is nominate someone who's not part of the dark side.
And who would that be? Obama, perhaps? Obama, everyone's great hope for the future?
That's a tough one.
Doogie Howser for president?
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's, you know, barely started his own term in Illinois, and now everyone's looking to like, well, he's young and he's acceptably black. And
he's a good public speaker.
He's a very good public speaker.
And he's not a mealy mouth.
Well, you know, actually, a good public speaker would be a fine change. I would love to have a good public speaker.
I so miss. Yeah. I mean,
I can't even handle watching the half sentences and strange grammar that I hear come out of our fearless leader's mouth. That just drives me up a wall.
He looks like a kid who's so proud that he just pronounced a new word.
Yeah.
That's
strategery.
Yeah. Nuclear.
Did you see the Andy Dick parody? I don't know what award show that was on where he played his coach who taught him to talk like that. Because the people want someone who sounds a little less smart. It was a great parody. And
boy, they've got him.
Oh, yeah, we sure have that.
Oh.
But I don't think they'll get away with even getting their own base excited about some new, fresh, shiny, squeaky Republican to run in the next election. I don't know what the Democrats are going to put up for fodder this time around, but I just don't think that what we've done in the last 8 years or, you know, what we will have done by the time this term actually ends is going to put them in any shape to get a re-election. You know, but they do own Diebold, so
that's right.
There's always just making the voting happen like we're in some other third world nation.
Well, I think Tor's theory, though, is valid in that we're only simulating a peaceful transition of power.
Right.
By democratic means, when in fact it's really just, you know, same old, same old.
Right, and that's why I don't think that we are going to be looking at any strange shenanigans with Dick Cheney resigning or anything like that, because I don't think it's going to be necessary, because people aren't really paying attention. You know, they reelected the bum, you know, for this term.
Right.
After seeing some of the damage he's done, and I think that, yeah, same old will happen without any strange hijinks.
Resign or deactivated, either one. We don't know which. So...
yes, we don't know how this term is going to end. Between the Iraq War, Hurricane Katrina, and the upcoming avian flu epidemic, who knows how many deaths there will be.
Tor, I'm glad you brought that up, because I have an avian flu update. This, I figure, is going to be one of Tank Riot's ongoing stories, which I'm only too glad to cover. Now, the killer flu, or better known by its scientific name of H5N1.
Yes, H5N1. Not to be confused with H5N2.
No,
which
no.
was a very not very killer flu. It was kind of a wimp.
Basically,
sniffles for a week.
You just get the drizzles.
Yeah, horrible.
But that's about it. N1, though, you're going to be taking a dirt nap. 50% mortality rate if it crosses over into humans so far. Now, it already qualifies as a bird pandemic because it's spreading to all types of migratory birds, all types of birds, period. So... already, there's just today, there was a fresh outbreak with 2,600 birds that died in Inner Mongolia. Add to that, European officials have reported outbreaks in Turkey and Romania, so it's spreading into Europe, and from there, we'll be able then to move into the Middle East and Africa. So possibly we could be just having a big old helping of avian flu with our turkey and our cranberry sauce. That's what I'm looking forward to. The main fear is that the H5N1 strain could combine with milder human flu strains that, of course, then would be communicable from human to human, but more or less having a payload like a computer virus of bird sub-flu types that the immune system just can't deal with. So when people have been affected by this, it's you know, been about a 50% mortality rate. And it acts in some ways like the 1918 Spanish flu, called the Spanish flu, by the way, because when it broke out during World War I, Spain was not involved in World War I. It did not have censorship of its press, like all the other participants, including the good old United States. So they were the first to report it. So then everyone goes, well, it must have started there then. So it's the Spanish flu. So, you know, it's that type of top-notch
science. Typhoid Mary.
That, yeah. So, because it's, if it does more or less mutate with those more communicable human flus, then you'd be looking at a human pandemic. And because jet travel is so fast, we have more crowded urban areas and so forth, it would spread much faster, much farther, and we'd have much less time to develop a vaccine. So what you're looking at then overall is that in 1918, you had 50 to 100 million deaths globally, possibly a bird origin. There were two lesser outbreaks of, and by the way, the 1918 flu is still around in milder form. I mean, it's not like it ever went away. And even though later this year they're going to publish, you know, the complete, you know, gene mapping of the 1918 virus, nobody still has an idea of why it attacked only the strongest portions of the population, 18 to 45. Now, there were lesser outbreaks of the flu, smaller pandemics, the Asian flu in 1957 and the Hong Kong flu in 1968. However, projections are that if this flu, the H5N1 virus, does in fact cross human barriers and become communicable this way, you're looking at 180 to 360 global million deaths. So that's
cheers
huge.
Cheers to that, everybody.
Cheers. Cheers. Like Travis Bickle said in Taxi Driver, someday a hard rain's going to fall and wash all the trash off the street.
I read that in Watchmen, too, I believe.
Mm.
But that's the kind of thing that, you know, we've been talking about for years. Everyone's aware that flus happen and these things do occur. They're, you know, they are
the government is
occurrence.
Totally prepared for something
and the government,
like this, right?
Well, the government's totally prepared for this, so I don't think we have to worry about it, right, Sputnik?
Well, I think, you know, tying into our first podcast, talking about George Bush authorizing the frontline military to enforce quarantine rules and so forth, and the fabulous performance of FEMA, not only for New Orleans, but its ongoing performance all over. And let's keep a good thought about Wilma. Tropical depression one night, the next day, the lowest pressure bar they've ever recorded in the Atlantic Basin. Category 5, heading like a bullet towards South Florida. Although, of course, Jebby, George's brother, will be there. There's a lot of rich white people. I think we can expect a much better performance from FEMA this time around. But with the flu, I'm thinking no.
They throw money at Florida like nobody's business when it comes
absolutely.
To that relief.
Now, I believe I heard that the best thing to combat this flu is, one, to have strong public health departments and to have strong hospitals with lots of extra hospital beds.
Right.
Which, we don't have those right now. Public health departments have seen huge funding cuts, and because we have an HMO system, they've cut way down on the number of hospital beds.
Right you are, Tor. We are going to be dealing with H5N1 on the front lines. So that's why that will be an ongoing story in Tank
Riot. I'll be taking a week's vacation, or maybe three or four, and hiding in my bunker to avoid all this flu business.
I think Northern Canada
with my
would be
water
a good place to go.
And my duct tape.
I have been trying to keep my immune system absolutely as perky and pert as possible by having a series of warm water and jalapeno enemas. Mm. Make mine wet and wild, and boy, I feel 100%.
Warms the cheeks.
I think so. Rosy, some would say.
Well, on that note, I believe Victor has a movie review for us.
Okay,
and he would also like to introduce his new rating system.
Yeah, I finally do have a rating system. It just came to me as if in a dream. We'll be using the Victor scale. So we're looking at a 1 to 10 scale here. I was going to go with, what is the Mercalli, modified Mercalli intensity scale, but I decided that would be a little too difficult.
So is 10 good and 1 bad?
10 would be good. 10 is the kind of a film that comes around... You know, fewer than one time a year. So Okay. And one would be your average household, 8,000 of these every.
Give us an example of a 10, Victor.
I don't know that I've ever seen a real 10, but, you know, okay. I always like to.
Star Wars.
I like to. Don't get me started on Star Wars.
Oh, by the way, the Spike TV channel has laid down buku bucks to have the rights to broadcast all six of the Star Wars movies.
Ooh. They could just put that in rotation for.
Oh yeah,
months.
And will and I'm will. Sure that money's going to pay
one
back
after the other over and over.
Absolutely,
yeah. Mm-hmm. But no, I like to think I'll see a 10, and I don't want to close the books on the best film ever. I mean, I've got some definite favorites out there. And the other thing about movies in general for me is if I know a movie's going to be a 1 or a 2 or I just know it's going to blow, I'm going to avoid it. So generally, when I'm talking about movies, it'll be because I have an interest in seeing it, I wanted to go see it, and therefore I'll probably like it, and if not. You all hear about it. So, all
right.
This week I went and saw Wallace and Gromit: Curse of the Were-Rabbit. I've been a fan of Nick Park for a long time, ever since I think A Grand Day Out was the first short with Wallace and Gromit from Aardman Animations back in 1989, and they did 3 shorts, and then Creature Comforts was another one too.
I didn't realize it was that far back.
Yeah. And in 93 I think was the last one. A Grand Day Out, The Wrong Trousers, and.
I love The Wrong Trousers.
The Wrong Trousers is a great one. And there was another one, too. Oh, Close Shave, which is a great one.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then they did, Nick Park is the director there who did the first theatrical full-length, which was Chicken Run.
Right.
With the dread Mel Gibson, who has gone nothing but down since Mad Max.
True.
So, but that was an okay film. I don't think it was stellar, but I was really excited to see a full-length Wallace and Gromit film because I've been a fan of those characters. I thought they were great. The thing about the movie is it's a G film, so your plot is pretty minimal. It's not in a class, I don't think, with films like The Incredibles or Finding Nemo. I have a soft spot for Pixar. I think they did a really good job on those films with combining adult themes with children's themes and not making the crass humor that you see in things like Shark Tale, where half the jokes are just incredibly over the children's head. Wallace and Gromit, the full length, did a little bit of that, where there was some crass humor, some ripoffs straight from Austin Powers with, the melons, the woman holding melons in front of her chest. But it was very British, definitely, decidedly British, and they kept that sensibility that I loved about them. And it was like watching a short, only longer. And it's not the greatest praise, but it was really good because I didn't get bored. I just really loved it. I would give it, I'm thinking like a 7.2 on the Victor scale.
So that's great.
I think it was up there as a good film. It's something for the kids, definitely something for the grown-ups.
Awesome.
The plot line is basically rabbit infestation is going wild, and there's a big garden growing competition going on in the village, and Wallace and Gromit are some rabbit catchers who humanely catch them with their suck-o-matic vacuum that safely doesn't kill the rabbits, and the competitor is a gun-toting hunter that wants to kill all the rabbits, and Wallace invents this way to stop rabbits from wanting to have vegetables anymore, and they create the curse of the were-rabbit. So I'm not giving anything away here, but it was definitely good, and they did a lot of homage to classic horror films, and there's some really great slapstick in there, and I thought it was a good film. I don't know. You've seen some of the shorts, right?
Oh, I've seen all of the shorts. I have not seen Curse of the Were-Rabbit yet, but I definitely want to. The Wrong Trousers was, I just thought, fabulous.
Yeah, I found myself laughing at some of the jokes, and some of the jokes meant just for adults. There's some written humor that I found myself just chuckling at, and I guess I'm a sucker for puns, the lowest form of humor, so I was okay with it.
Yeah, I saw at least one short on TV years ago, and I just thought it was fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
And hilarious,
This
too.
Is stop animation, claymation, too, and they're doing things that are, it's just really inventive. Yeah. But I think it was the humor that really got me. Jokes were just over the top, so I definitely would recommend it.
Now, someone mentioned to me, Victor, that before the actual movie, that there was a short with the penguins doing like a Star Trek parody?
Well, there's a short with the penguins that were in Madagascar, which was an okay film, B-plus kind of film. But the penguins were great characters in that film, and this is I think it's a computer animated short.
Okay.
And, yeah, it was kind of a military operation over Christmas was the story of the Penguins, and they're great characters, and it was a good short. It was actually really long. I was surprised at how long it was.
Oh, really?
Short. But yeah, it was
okay.
It was entertaining.
All
definitely,
right.
Definitely.
Sounds good.
If you have a 2-3 year old, they might get a little bored with the film, but at least you wouldn't get bored watching it. I would never suggest parents go watch something like Barney, but I would suggest Wallace and Gromit for the family.
Barney.
I hate when parents put themselves through horrible things for their children.
Yeah. Death to Smoochie.
I agree. Yeah.
So. Well, Victor, do you have any DVD picks?
Yeah, and then on the DVD front, Batman Begins just came out, and I was so horribly wounded by the total destruction of the Batman franchise from when it started in the beginning as a great film in, I think it was 88 or somewhere like that, with Michael Keaton as Batman, which a lot of people don't know what to think about that. I loved it. Michael Keaton was awesome. Jack Nicholson was awesome as the Joker in that film. And then every film after that one was worse and worse and worse. And
Joel Schumacher.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you so much.
So when Batman Begins came out, I said, no, thank you. You have gotten enough of my money. And I was disgusted.
Absolutely.
And I avoided it like the plague. And then all these reviews started pouring in about how great it was. And so I finally said, okay, I'm going to rent this as soon as it comes out. Got my hands on it, and I watched it today, actually. So I thought that was a really great film. And have you seen it?
Yes, I have. Okay. I watched it last night, and I couldn't agree more. It was fantastic.
There were no lightsabers, but there were some sword fights.
Yes.
So you might enjoy that.
Okay.
You can make the sound effects.
The only drawback, I would say, to the entire movie was the inclusion of half of Tomcat, which is to say Katie Holmes, pre-pregnancy, or so we think. We're not sure. But that totally wooden kind of performance there from that bizarre woman child.
Yeah, I would say her performance wasn't the greatest. The performance that really surprised me, that blew me away, was Sergeant Jim Gordon, who eventually becomes Commissioner Gordon of the Batman world, the Batman universe. But he shows up as a sergeant, played by Gary Oldman.
That was a huge surprise.
Played by Sid Vicious himself, Gary Oldman.
Right.
It was an awesome performance, and I thought Christian Bale was great, and Christopher Nolan was the director, and he did Memento, which is another one of my
favorite
movies. Yeah, he came out of nowhere and directed Memento, and he's done a couple other films, and then he somehow got his hands on the Batman Begins film, and I didn't make the connection until after I'd seen it that it was the same guy. I loved Memento. I had to go back and watch it.
Memento is a great movie.
Yeah, one of the few films I got to the end of and had to rewind and watch over again immediately. Same thing with Reservoir Dogs. It was another film that I had to watch twice in the same day. But yeah, I really liked it. And the bad guy in it, I think that was Cillian Murphy as Scarecrow.
Right.
There were some great... Ra's al Ghul shows up, and then there's even an allusion to the Joker. I just really... They hit everything
on
that one.
It was much more comic book based than the other... the other movies, to me, always seemed like they drew more from the 1960s camp Batman.
Right.
Which, you know, can be fun in its own right, but, I mean, if you're a fan of The Dark Knight, you know, you want something a little bit meatier. Now, I was definitely one of those people that did not dig Michael Keaton being Batman.
I loved it. And I thought they hit the tone on that first one, too. I thought they weren't as campy in the first one. But, of course, it was a little over the top. And how much Prince can you have?
Tim Burton nailed the look and the feel of Gotham City, I thought. But I think the problem was is that you had known people in those roles. And Jack Nicholson, though his performance was very good, it's like everything Jack Nicholson does. It's Jack Nicholson being Jack Nicholson.
Right.
And so that kind of, you know, I never believed him totally as the Joker. And Michael Keaton, for God's sakes, he wore a turtleneck. far too short, the rubber suit, although not in the later movies with nipples and a codpiece.
Oh,
and the only thing was missing was a zipper in the ass.
And the governator.
Oh, yeah. All that, yeah.
Yeah, it's too much to handle.
Those were awful. But those to me, were complete ripoffs of the 60s camp. Whereas Batman Begins, I think, incorporated all the best elements of the Batman Year One series, some of the Dark Knight, and so forth. The Scarecrow and Ra's al Ghul were definitely never in the movies or TV or anything. Great performances.
They were done so well. I liked, you know, how do you do the psychedelic Scarecrow. But they did it. They did it really well.
And Christian Bale really made me believe he was Batman. He looked good in the outfit when he was building the Batcave and all of his equipment and everything. I totally believe that that would work that way. So, I mean, he was great. Yeah. I mean, he was very, very, very good in that role. I would have to say that was the best of the Batman movies.
And this is a guy who comes from movies like American Psycho, where he's playing a truly demented, psychotic person.
Oh, and don't forget The Machinist.
Yeah, and then he's in The Machinist, which is another uplifting film where Christian Bale plays someone just over the edge. And I thought, well, that's a great way to, you know, keep the edginess of the Bruce Wayne character. And you get a great guy like that, and I thought he did it really well. And Michael Caine as Alfred was really good, too.
Oh, Michael Caine, come on. Yeah. You know, what I thought was interesting is that this is the first movie that I saw the two hardest working men in Hollywood in the same film. That, of course, being Michael Caine and the Electric Company's former Easy Reader, Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman.
These guys, they're in everything. Yeah. They have to be.
Morgan Freeman didn't narrate, so...
No, but it was getting close. I mean, he has those tones.
Oh, Rutger Hauer as well. I mean... Handpicked cast. That was awesome cast. I love seeing all those faces.
Oh, and of course, Liam Neeson as Ra's al Ghul. Mm-hmm. He was very good
Liam Neeson was great in the film.
So, although...
Of Star Wars fame, you might recognize him as Qui-Gon Jinn.
That's right.
Absolutely.
So Victor, what's the Victor scale rating for Batman Begins?
I would say Batman Begins, if I can pull out my little Victor scale chart here, it would be a 7.9. This is a major earthquake, can cause serious damage over large areas. We're looking at somewhere around 18 per year of this type of film.
Okay.
Wow.
Sounds very, very good.
I was very impressed with it.
Okay. Oh, my own personal DVD pick, this is from last week, though, Kingdom of Heaven. I really enjoyed that one. Yes, I did. But that's probably just me. I'm a big, huge history nerd. But it was all about the Second Crusade.
Right. Well, you could just turn on CNN and get the Third Crusade.
That would be actually number 5.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I'm not keeping score.
Well, number 4 was... number 1 worked the best. The Christians held Jerusalem for about a century. And then 2, 3, and 4... never really got to be very much. In fact, by 4, all the Crusaders got as far as Constantinople and thought, well, hell, why be uncomfortable and travel to the Holy Land and have to fight Saracens when we can really just rape and pillage right here? After that, the Crusades kind of winnowed away.
Lost their wind.
Until, of course, 2003.
Yeah, and they even we're going to call it a crusade. Then they kind of realized that's a bad word. Maybe the marketing department said, no, that won't play well.
George actually did use the word crusade, did he not, early on?
And I think so, yeah.
Yeah, he said, it's a crusade. And then one of his generals showed up in full military regalia and was speaking at his local church and going on as if, you know, he was, in fact, going to put on the Knights Templar outfit and charge into Baghdad.
I was in a Christian bookstore a number of years ago. And
how did that happen? Have to use a can or something? How did that happen,
Tor? They took off the blindfold, and there I was.
Were you looking for the latest VeggieTale?
I was looking for some good music, you know?
In a Christian bookstore.
Have you ever seen... You have a couple children, Tor. I think we can tell our listeners that. Have you ever rented or showed them the VeggieTales? Christian Vegetables... I understand it.
They may have seen that at some other people's houses. I'm not sure.
There's that whole running thing in kids' television. If I can interrupt one thing, like JJ the Jet Plane, Thomas the Tank Engine, and VeggieTales, they all do Christian versions of their show.
Right.
And then they do the secular heathen version of their show. And
So,
I didn't know there's two versions, though.
Yeah, so if you want to watch, if you really want to get your religion and your children's programming simultaneously, you can watch the religious version. I don't know how, you know, if you buy it or what, but I was kind of appalled that they would do that.
Well, I watched one of the VeggieTale videos after a few highballs. I'm not going to lie to you.
Oh, gosh.
And there was this one part where I think his name is Larry. He's the cucumber. Listeners, please feel free to correct me if you know the name of the cucumber.
At 4 in the morning, put the scotch down and don't turn on
VeggieTales. Oh, my God. Well, so he says something like, Jesus thinks I'm special. Well, of course you're fucking special. You're a talking cucumber.
I mean, I think you're special.
Yeah, Chris, why wouldn't you be? You know, I think you're special.
Oh, and a tie into Wallace and Gromit. Do you remember Davy and Goliath?
Oh, God. That depressed me as a child.
That scared me as a child. Those googly eyes.
Yeah. That's not right, Davy. And
there was like nothing else on when it was on.
Mm-hmm.
You had to watch it.
Mm-hmm. It was like, if you're not going to Sunday school, you're going to watch Davy and Goliath and learn your Christian lesson.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
Back to the Christian bookstore where you took the blindfold off and there you were.
I'm in a Christian bookstore.
No pants.
And
on.
Lo and
I'm sorry.
I'm throwing
color commentary that's unnecessary.
I had pants on that day. Okay. Anyway, there's they had some toys, and amongst the toys,
marital aid toys or what kind of toys?
No.
What kind of Christian?
Well,
Christian
and by
toys.
Christian, I didn't know you.
I would consider these toys even more twisted than any kind of marital aid toy. What you had is a toy Crusaders outfit
that
you could get your child.
Wow.
So it's the little
armored vest
and the big plastic sword.
The fake head of a Muslim prisoner.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like, you know.
That's wonderful.
Just time for Halloween.
Just because people hundreds of years ago said that they were Christians and they killed a bunch of Muslims doesn't mean it's a Christian thing to do.
Oh, so, like Bruce Springsteen said, glory days.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, by the way, apparently he was in Madison recently, but did
Bruce?
Kind of, yeah, mm. Bruce, but did like an all acoustic set, including like at one point using a zither. It's like, oh, please, thank you.
If we haven't said yet, listeners, we're running this podcast out of Madison, Wisconsin.
And, that's right.
Actually coming soon to Madison, I believe playing at the Annex, our Thunderbirds are now. With a couple other great indie rock bands. And
okay.
You should check them out if you get a chance. But please avoid the Coliseum and things like Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, I mean, no kidding. You know, doing an acoustic set, that's just wonderful. So is he having some sort of midlife crisis? And, you know, hey, blow your face off, Bruce.
I don't know. I don't really have anything against him, but I've never really been able to get my toe tapping to his music.
Just, no, well, I don't, because I'll tell you what. Bruce Springsteen is a second-rate Bob Dylan. You know?
I don't even think he's in that category.
That's right.
Bob Dylan,
he's not worthy to carry his harmonica
like
rest.
Like a Bob Seger kind of rock.
Oh,
Americana
Bob
rock
Meager
thing or whatever.
Like a rock.
I'm like, this doesn't sound
that's
like
a channel
Seger
changer for me. Yeah.
Is he related like, somehow?
Oh, God.
TankRiot.com. Go visit our website.
Please, we're very lonely.
If
anything you have
out
to
of
say
my mind on what I'm saying about movies, or if is completely correct about Mr. Cheney, and if you already have a bird, can you email us at feedback@tankriot.com and let us know how that's going for you.
And we'd like to thank our listeners in Finland, and Mexico, and Norway.
Radioactivity and radioactive materials have many mean-time uses. That they can be used harmfully, as in atomic bombs. Don't hesitate. Find trouble. Everyone is in on this. Strangers will understand. Doing a good job means simply following the rules. In this early and troubled stage of the atomic age, our very lives may depend on always being alert.